But first, we're going to talk about the nightmare that took place in that movie theater in Aurora, Colorado a week ago. How long is the half-life of our horror and disgust over nightmares like this? I'm still trying to process it. Adam Gopnik has written about the Aurora massacre for The New Yorker, and he is here with me now. Adam, welcome back to Studio 360.
Good to be back, Kurt.
So you wrote in your piece shortly after the news of this happened that one of your kids was at one of those opening day midnight screenings of The Dark Knight Rises. This is your teenage son?
This is my teenage son, my 17-year-old, Luca.
And how did the conversation with him go after that next morning?
Well, to be honest, Kurt, we've had an ongoing conversation stretching out for the last 5 years at least about violence in video games and violence in movies. That is my saying, are you sure that this is a good idea to play Halo? Are you sure that the first Batman film is as good as you want it to be? Because I was concerned by those things. And he says, absolutely sensibly and correctly, look, there's a huge gap between the things we do in our imaginative life and the things we do in our actual life and so on. So it's oddly enough, we've been having this conversation at a reasonably detached level for a long time. But of course, as soon as I heard about it, something went through me. I don't know, honestly, Kurt, how I come down on the question about violence in the movies, violence in entertainment, and violence in the real world. It's a hugely complicated question.
Well, and it's interesting to me that show business people like to take credit for social progress. I think they correctly say, oh, look at the images of black people we put on television. Look at the images of gay people we put on television, and softened up the ground for actual real-life tolerance. And I think that's true. But when it comes to the potential more obscure downsides, no. Movies don't cause real-life violence.
The problem I always think when we talk about these things is that we want causality. And culture doesn't give us causality. It doesn't say, oh, well, if you stopped this, then this would
happen. Because that wouldn't be the case.
Right, exactly. But there's connectivity without causality. And that, I think, is what the problem is. The connectivity of a culture is a deep thing. We can say, it doesn't matter what it causes. It matters what it is. I don't want my kid engaged in the act of simulating mass killing, even if he grows up to be a college professor or a radio host or, God help him, a magazine writer.
Seems to me, tell me if you think this is crazy or not, over the last 50 years, since I was young, that the lines between fantasy and real life have become blurrier, and mostly in benign ways of online avatars and playing Farmville and dressing up in costumes and all the rest. But I feel as though it's easier for people to get over-invested in fiction and act out.
I agree, but I always recognize that our agreement is partly generational, and that if I look honestly at my own upbringing with two college professor parents, I had an armory. I had a man from Uncle Gun.
Playing war all the time, for sure.
I had cap guns. Did you have cap guns, right, which actually made
these
little things? So anybody could look at us and say, these guys have amnesia about the theatrical violence, the imaginative violence in their upbringing. You know what I think is the big difference is that it used to be individual acts of violence. It was the roundhouse punch and the gun duel at the beginning of Gunsmoke. And now, if you haven't killed 60 people, you're not a villain in a movie any longer. It no longer even begins to count. A single death counts for nothing.
Sometimes these mass murders in other countries are similarly inexplicable without political motivation. But a year ago in Norway, there was the guy had political reasons. Why is it, do you think? Does it say something about America that these massacres here are without any politics?
That's a fascinating question. I hadn't thought about it very much. I suspect that there is something to be said that when people go crazy, they go crazy in the style of the place that they live. And you go crazy in Europe, and crazy in Europe is associated with politics. It's associated with ideology, most typically. So in a certain sense, it's natural for a psychopath in Germany to bend towards the neo-Nazis or towards the extreme right in Norway. In America, a less politicized country, we don't associate violence, perhaps. I'm thinking out loud.
I mean, there's Tim McVeigh 20
right,
years ago.
But who did have a political ideology. But we tend to have fantasies much more of individual sort of self-expression through the annihilation of others. You know, it's a strange thing. I was watching an old movie called The Sniper from 1961, and it's pre-Oswald, but it's all about a lonely man. It's sort of the first lonely man with a rifle movies who expresses himself through killing people. And I do think that that's a powerful thread in the American imagination.
It's interesting too that in quite a few of these movies, including some of the Christopher Nolan Batman movies, the villains are motivated by a desire for massive media attention.
Yes, exactly. They're motivated to kill enormous numbers of people, huge numbers of people, in order to get attention for their own internal grievance. And the movie is always basically, your grievance may be reasonable, but your action is inappropriate. That's sort of the moral that Batman brings to it.
I know you don't see movies and TV shows and big pop cultural events necessarily when they're happening, but does this event make you not want to see, for instance, The Dark Knight Rises or lay off the ultra-violence in cinema?
Yeah, you know, look, I think Christopher Nolan's a wonderful filmmaker. I thought Inception was a fabulous film, and I'm sure that there's all kinds of artful and intelligent stuff in this that I would benefit from seeing. But how much do you have to benefit from it in order not to be a little bit revulsed by it? Is it incumbent on us always to pretend that we just love watching scenes of massacre and mass destruction? You know, somebody said, I remember after 9/11, oh my God, it was unimaginable. Well, no, it wasn't. It had been imagined over and over again for pleasure. It's only when it actually happens that you realize what its actual content is. And for me, at least, that kind of schizophrenic divorce between the actual content and the imagined content of our lives, it becomes uglier and uglier as I get older.
Adam Gopnik, thanks very much.
Pleasure to be here.